Our learning tonight should be dedicated to the speedy recovery of the father of one of our alumni, Lior Ben Yiska. Hashem should send him a refuah shlema, a complete recovery, and hachlama gemura u'meira. We're waiting to hear good news.
Amen.
The question was asked, was Moshe Rabbeinu perfect? So, the simple answer is, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't perfect. The Torah tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu sinned. The Torah tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu made certain mistakes. And the Gemara clearly says that Moshe Rabbeinu got angry in last week's Parsha and Parsha's Matos, and so he forgot. The Torah says that he sinned, and God tells him that's why he won't enter the land of Israel. What was his sin? We're not sure. We don't know exactly what it was. God tells him, you have one sin, and because of that, you won't enter the land of Israel. But in truth, we have to be a little bit more careful when we discuss Moshe Rabbeinu. God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Hinei netaticha Elohim lefaro, ve'aharon achicha yiye nevi'echa. Re'ei netaticha. God says, behold, I have put you in position of authority over Pharaoh, and Aaron, your brother, will be your speaker. That's one possible translation of the verse. But there's another translation that when God tells Moshe, Re'ei netaticha Elokim lefaro, Elokim over there doesn't mean like Elokim that is a reference to the mundane, to the human court, which means a term of power, but rather Elokim could mean a godly power. Elokim could mean a human power. El means force. Elokim. When we refer to a court can sometimes be called Elokim. They're not godly, but they have power. When we refer to angels or to God, we could also use the word Elokim. So the simple understanding is, God tells Moshe, behold, I have placed you as a power over Pharaoh, Ve'aharon achicha yiyeh nevi'echa, and Aaron your brother will speak on your behalf. Aaron your brother will be your prophet. Doesn't mean literally, but rather he will be your speaker. The word navi can be understood from the source of niv spatayim, speech of the lips. And when God tells Moshe, Aaron your brother will be your navi, it means he will be your speaker. So that's one understanding. But there's another understanding that Rav Saadia Gaon and others explain, that God was telling Moshe, from this moment on, Moshe Rabbeinu, you are going to be on the level of an angel. From this moment on, I will speak to you directly in a fashion that I do not speak to other prophets. And anyone that hears you must be on the level of a prophet. So that, such that when Aaron quotes you, the fact that he is quoting you means that he is acting like a prophet, because you are no longer going to say your own thoughts. What you say will constantly be a representation of me, and any time you speak, he who listens to you is on the level of a prophet. This is an ancient tradition, this understanding of the verse. We wouldn't necessarily think to understand it that way, but Rav Saadia Gaon quotes that understanding, as do others. There is a story that is quoted in the Shita Mekubetzet. Shitam Kubetzet was a late Rishon, and he quotes the following story. He says, there was once a wise man, and he had a following. And there was a king who wanted to know about this wise man, so he didn't want to travel out to the desert to see the wise man. He sent out his sculptors, and they sculpted a form of this wise man. He sent out his painters, they painted this wise man. He brought it back and showed his wise men, take a look at this person and tell me what kind of person is he. So his wise men said, well, his nature is to be angry, his nature is to be a murderer, his nature is to be a thief, all kinds of derogatory things. So the king said, okay, someone here deserves the death penalty. Either my sculptors and painters are fooling me, they sculpted and painted someone else, and that's why my wise men say that this man has this nature. Or else, my wise men are not so wise after all, and they deserve the death penalty, because that person has such a reputation. If my sculptors and painters did an accurate job, so I know my wise men are worthless, because this is an exceptional person. He doesn't have all of those character traits. So the king said, how can I verify who's right? I myself will have to travel to the desert to see this wise man. The king got on his chariot, traveled out to the desert, came and saw the wise man and said, now I know all my wise men deserve death penalty. My sculptors did a perfect job, my painters did a perfect job, my wise men are foolish. But once he's there, so the wise man sees him and he says, what do you seek here? So the king tells him the story. So the wise man tells him, no, your wise men are correct. If I were a person whose natural tendencies were to be kind and good and not to steal and just be a positive person, that would be no great shakes. That's the way God created me. But the truth is that my tendency is to be a thief and a murderer and every negative thing you could think of, but I overcame all of that. That's why I am who I am. Your wise men could only see, according to the way I look, what my inborn tendencies are. Well, those are my tendencies, but I've overcome all of that. So your wise men are correct. That's a story that's quoted in the Shittim Kubetzet. Now, there's no intrinsic problem with the story. The Rambam writes in Shmona Prakim that we don't agree with that wise man. The Rambam writes, we think that the most positive thing is that a person has natural tendencies that match what our logic would dictate as normal behavior. Meaning, there are two types of mitzvot. There are mitzvot that our logic agrees with, such as don't steal, don't kill. And then there are mitzvot that we logically would never think of. Eat kosher. Why should I eat kosher? Don't eat meat with milk. Don't wear shatnez. Those mitzvot have nothing to do with our logic. So on those mitzvot, we say, a person reasonably could, and there's nothing wrong if he says, I'd love to eat pork. The Torah tells me not to eat pork. I don't eat pork. And then we admire such a person. Because what's he saying? He's saying, the only reason I don't do this is because the Torah tells me that. But if a person says, I'd love to kill. The Torah tells me not to kill. I don't kill. So we say, okay, fine. We're happy you're not killing. But we don't admire you. Yeah. We say, kol kavod to you, but it's more admirable if you say, my nature is not to kill.
I prefer another roommate.
So, the Rambam divides the mitzvot this way. So this wise man in the desert, we say, kol kavod to you. It's a fine thing that you're doing, that you overcome your traits. But it's more admirable if you say, my natural tendency is to be a kind person and not a murderer, etc. Till here we're all together, right? The Shittim Kubetzet writes a story about a wise man in a desert. And our tradition is that this wise man, we respect him, but if such a wise man ever did exist, we don't view this as the most admirable state in the world. Approximately 150 years ago, someone, I don't want to mention the name, a great rabbi wrote a commentary on the Mishnah. And it is a phenomenal commentary. Big, big, big Tanit Chacham. In his commentary on Pirkei Avos, he quotes this story from the Shittim Kubetzet, and he writes it about Moshe Rabbeinu. Not about some wise man in the desert, but rather about Moshe Rabbeinu. That there was a king who wanted to see Moshe Rabbeinu, and he sent his sculptors, he sent his painters, they came back. The whole story, just as we said it, but instead of writing, this is a story that's told about a wise man in the desert, he writes, this is a story about Moshe Rabbeinu. All of Europe went up in uproar. The rabbis started writing letters against his commentary, reached the point that many Hasidish Beis Medrash will not, to this day, hold his commentary in the Beis Medrash, because he wrote such a thing. And one of the things that were expounded upon was that Moshe Rabbeinu is not like anyone else. We got the whole Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu. It's true, we don't have saints in Judaism. No one's perfect. But Moshe Rabbeinu is still not within our realm. And you definitely cannot ascribe such a story to Moshe Rabbeinu. We say that when Moshe Rabbeinu was born, the whole house filled with light. There are many midrashim about Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was unique. We say that God didn't even want him to nurse from the kosher. We say you could nurse from an Egyptian woman. But the mouth that God would speak through and give the whole Torah, God didn't want such a mouth nursing from Egyptian women. So the Torah clearly states that he had to get a Jewish wet nurse when the Egyptian princess found him. So Moshe Rabbeinu is in a different state. Take an average baby. What does he care which milk he drinks? This mother, that mother. No, they pass him around all the Egyptian women and he won't drink. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, that's unique. The whole Torah went through Moshe Rabbeinu's mouth. So I'm only bringing this story because we have to be far more careful when we speak about Moshe Rabbeinu. It's true that Chazal teach us that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't perfect. And it's true that the Torah clearly states that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't perfect. But we have to be very, very careful when we speak about Moshe Rabbeinu. Now I want to conclude with just another thought. We know that Lot, Avram's nephew, had two daughters. And there was a time when Lot and his two daughters were in a cave, and the daughters thought that the whole world was destroyed, and the only way that there could be a continuum from humanity was if there was incest between them and their father. And they knew that when the world was created, Cain and Hevel lived with their sisters, and that's how the world began. So they knew that God permits this at a time when there is no choice. If there's no other way to move the world forward, then God permits it. And the Torah has a reference to this as well. The Torah, when it prohibits siblings from living together, the Torah says, Chesed Hu, which can be interpreted in many ways. One of the things the Gemara says, why it says Chesed Hu, is that there, in the beginning of creation, God did a Chesed, He did a kindness with the world. In order for the world to continue, God allowed it to work this way until there were enough people for people to marry other people. But initially, that was the only way the world could move forward. So Lot's daughters did what they did. And our tradition is that they were fine people, Lot's daughters. They really did it l'shem shamayim. They really did it with the intent for heaven. They really thought there was no other choice, and that's what God wanted them to do. There was once a person who spoke about Lot's daughters, and he spoke in a disparaging way. He spoke lightly. Said, well, these two girls, blah, 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 and he spoke about them not so nicely. And then they appeared to him in a dream. And they complained to him how he spoke about them that way. And there's a tshuva, a response in Negros Moshe, of Moshe Feinstein. He sends a question. The story happened about 60 years ago, 50 years ago. He sent a question to Rabbi Feinstein. He said, what am I supposed to do now? The girls came to me in a dream, Lot's daughters, and I obviously erred. And Rabbi Feinstein writes to him back, yes, you erred. And he writes to him how he has to do tshuva for how he spoke about Lot's daughters. So we have to always be careful how we speak about people. Even people that we think, what's worse, they did incest. But Chazal tell us they thought they had no choice. They thought they were doing right. So if this is how careful we have to be about Lot's daughters, who weren't Jewish, weren't prophets, they weren't the father of all prophets, think how much more so we have to be careful when we speak about Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the father of all prophets, who is the one who gave us our Torah, we have to be careful. That's all.
So if someone doesn't